Welcome, everyone. I'm Marilyn Stern, Associate Fellow at the Forum, and I'll be your chair. Today we welcome Dr. Jonathan Speier, Senior Research Fellow at the Global Research and International Affairs Center in Herzliya, Israel. Dr. Speier is a columnist for the Jerusalem Post and author of The Transforming Fire, The Rise of the Israel-Islamist Conflict. Today's briefing is part of a series covering the ongoing turmoil in Egypt. Deposed President Morsi goes on trial on Monday, and this will no doubt trigger further unrest. And what is the status of Egypt's failing economy? The Obama administration has reduced financial support to Egypt under General al-Sisi, and Russia is poised to fill the vacuum. How will that move affect regional stability? Dr. Speier will give us his take on the events in the region. Dr. Speier?
Thank you very much. Well, first of all, good afternoon to all those listening. What I want to do then is just give, first of all, a very brief bit of background as to how we got to where we currently stand here in Egypt, and then look at the responses of the various players, look briefly at the situation in Sinai, also vis-a-vis Israel, and then look at the U.S. response. To get straight to it then, well, people will be familiar, of course, with the very dramatic turn of events in the course of this year, starting off the year with a sense that we were at the edge of a new historical period of Muslim Brotherhood ascension, not only in Egypt, but also across the region, also in Tunisia, also increasingly importantly in Syria, and much of that now being reversed. And the key moment of that, of course, being the coup, and I think we should call it a coup, that took place on July the 3rd this year in Egypt, when General al-Sisi and a group of his colleagues effectively step in to remove from government President Mohamed Morsi and the elected government of the Muslim Brotherhood. Just briefly to be aware of a number of the immediately precipitating reasons for this, in order to understand who General al-Sisi is. Importantly, and I think not sufficiently focused upon, was the fact that President Morsi had threatened to declare jihad on the Assad regime in Syria in the weeks prior to the coup. And this is something which Sisi himself has mentioned on a number of occasions as being a key reason for his choosing to step in. In other words, a sense on the part of the army of growing chaos, of a sort of loosening of bonds and loosening of control on foreign policy, and of the Muslim Brotherhood taking Egypt down an unexplored road which the army and these generals were determined to prevent. So they step in, Morsi disappears into imprisonment, the Muslim Brotherhood is declared illegal, the Muslim Brotherhood leadership begins, the most senior leadership begins to be rounded up. The Brotherhood, of course, responds with civil disobedience, and on August 14th, as we know, following an initial period in which it was thought that possibly Sisi would hope to meet the Brotherhood halfway, perhaps allow them some kind of political role in the new Egypt, on August 14th, of course, the army sent in to crush the Muslim Brotherhood occupation of the Al-Rabia Mosque. They do so with the death of hundreds, and in effect, a collision course begins from that moment on between the military government of Sisi and the Muslim Brothers. Well, this chaotic situation continues until this day. We mentioned a moment ago that the trial of Mohamed Morsi is scheduled to begin on November 4th. The Muslim Brotherhood have called for a round of demonstrations to coincide with the opening of the trial. It looks like this could be a new round, so to speak, of direct clashes between the Brotherhood and the army. Simultaneously with the largely unarmed, though tumultuous, campaign of the Muslim Brotherhood demanding the reinstatement of President Mohamed Morsi, there is a developing insurgency in the Sinai area. It had been allowed in the course of the year of Muslim Brotherhood governance to become a largely ungoverned area to which jihadi forces had, or jihadi elements had congregated. Following the deposing of the Gaddafi regime in Libya, a large amount of weaponry was smuggled into that area. And there is, in effect, an insurgency taking place there of jihadis, of al-Qaeda-type elements, against the government of Sisi. Sisi has deployed a very serious force into Sinai with the permission of Israel, including 20,000 troops and Apache helicopter gunships and armor, and he's doing what he can against that insurgency. But interestingly, in the course of the last couple of weeks, we have seen the first examples of that insurgency striking west of the Suez Canal, that's to say striking towards Egypt itself, an attempt on the life of Interior Minister Mohamed Ibrahim in Cairo, and a bombing in the city of Ismailia in which 11 people were wounded, including six soldiers. So a strong sense then of that growing insurgency, an attempt by the Sisi government in its information campaigning, so to speak, to link the two, to link the Muslim Brotherhood uprising in Egypt proper with the jihadi uprising, armed insurgency in Sinai, and to present the two as factors of the same thing. And this is an important point which I'd like to pause at for a moment. What does this show us? I think this shows us something of the political strategy or political national strategy of General Sisi. Contrary to expectations, General Sisi has not and is not attempting to meet the Islamists halfway and to allow them some kind of political role. What he's doing may look unfamiliar to many Western eyes in the present time, because we're used to the idea that insurgencies have to be met halfway, that one tries to reach a stalemate, that one tries to reach some kind of accommodation. That's not what Sisi is trying to do. Sisi, with the help, with the active assistance, or the strong support of the Kingdom of Saudi Arabia and the United Arab Emirates, Sisi is trying to crush the Muslim Brotherhood, to deal a telling and historic defeat to those forces. And in a certain sense, in my estimation at least, the fact that we have a growing armed insurgency in Sinai may well be unpleasant on a national security level, but on a political level, from the army's point of view, this is quite good, because of course what it's doing is it's forcing the Islamists to play on a playing field on which they cannot possibly win. If it comes to armed action, they can do many things, but they cannot defeat the Egyptian security forces. The Salafis and the Islamists are not going to come back to come to power as a result of defeating the Egyptian armed forces. So this seems to me to be something of the strategy which Sisi is adopting. I said I'd say something about Israel, and I think this is very important. I'm speaking from Jerusalem, and I think it's important for people to know this. Quietly and without a great deal of public fanfare, the Israeli government and the Israeli security establishment are content, are extremely content with what took place on 3rd July 2013 and with what has taken place since. General Sisi was a known quantity to the Israeli establishment. He was someone they were confident they could work with, and everything which has taken place since the coup suggests that they were correct in that assumption. That is to say that cooperation and communication between the Egyptian security forces, who of course now rule Egypt, and the security establishment in Israel, is at the highest point that it has been for many years. Disaster was averted between Israel and Egypt in the year of Muslim Brotherhood government because of the fact that the armed forces still had some kind of input into affairs in the country. And now that the armed forces are the governing authority in the country, this is something which is seen to be with a great deal of satisfaction from Jerusalem. Of course, from the United States point of view, there has been a very different response to the Sisi coup. And people listening will be familiar with the details with regard to the suspending of much of the $1.6 billion aid package, the ceasing of the delivery of four F-16 fighter bomber aircraft, the cancellation of the Bright Star joint training exercises in September, and so on and so forth. The Americans have been careful not to burn their bridges with Sisi. They have not defined what took place on July the 3rd as a coup, which of course it clearly was, and they've not done so in order to not make necessary the complete cutting of ties. Egypt gains enormously, of course, from the bilateral relationship with the U.S., but the U.S. also needs to keep its connections open with Egypt, also, for example, because of the U.S. Privileged access to the Suez Canal, also because of the vital role of the Egyptians in counter-terror. So this is a very complex situation for the United States. My own sense is that a mistake is being made by the Americans, in my humble estimation, if I may say so, in not gripping very closely to the Sisi regime, or the Sisi government as it currently is constituted, because in my estimation at least, the situation in Egypt in early 2013 was a revolutionary situation, analogous to revolutionary situations which we've seen elsewhere in the world. And if I may be permitted a historic comparison in early 1917, after the abdication of the Tsar, there was a period of months in which all sensible analysts said that one of two people is going to win here. Either Vladimir Lenin is going to win or General Kornilov is going to win. That is to say, either the revolutionary forces were going to take power or the counter-revolutionary forces were going to take power. But there was no third way. And it would seem to me, in my estimation at least, that the situation in Egypt in the course of 2013 was directly analogous to that situation. And the Muslim Brotherhood were embarked on a very determined ideological process in which the largest Arabic-speaking country was going to be transformed into an anti-Western Islamist power, which would seek to link up with similar powers elsewhere in the region. This was a scenario which was potentially disastrous from a Western point of view and also from an Israeli point of view, certainly. And it is General al-Sisi who has intervened to prevent that situation. That is the reality. He is not a secular man. He is not a liberal democrat. He's not going to be either of those things. Egypt, in my estimation, is not going to be either a secular country or a liberal democratic country for many, many years to come, and perhaps not ever. But at the same time, what General Sisi and his colleagues have done is they have prevented catastrophe on the Nile, and they have brought Egypt back to the potential to being potentially at least a force for stability and potentially also a pro-Western country. Now, what has happened is that the U.S. and the West have chosen to relate to the act of General Sisi in such a way as to leave a vacuum into which other powers are now keenly seeking to step in. First and foremost, or firstly in terms of time, and least threateningly, the first countries to congratulate General Sisi on his coup were, of course, the Kingdom of Saudi Arabia and the United Arab Emirates, and they have stepped in to provide money to the tune, or pledges at least, to the tune of $12 billion to tide over the new regime. That's not such a problem. Those countries are themselves dependent on the West for military, for their security. But what we're now seeing, of course, is President Putin of Russia noting a possible opening, has made it clear that he is quite prepared to replace the U.S. in, for example, the joint military exercises cancelled after the coup. He currently appears to be considering a state visit to Egypt. A closer Russian relationship with Egypt would bring the Russians back into the region in a real way, in a way which they have not been here for the last decade, essentially since Egypt abandoned them in the early 70s. Such a relationship would give Russia access to Egypt's Mediterranean ports. This is something which the Russians seek. The Russians have a sense of the U.S. being in retreat everywhere in the region, from Iraq, from Syria, from Saudi Arabia, and now also from Egypt, and they are keen to step in, and their intentions should not be mistaken for benevolent ones. So that's the situation currently as it stands. As it seems to me, and on this I will conclude, just to reiterate, it seems to me that it makes sense to embrace the Sisi regime as much as it can be embraced. It is not an anti-Western regime in any way whatsoever in terms of its nature. It is a pragmatic regime. It is not a liberal democratic regime, but it is one which, in an analogous fashion to such similar non-democracies as Kingdom of Saudi Arabia or Hashemite Kingdom of Jordan, these countries may not have governance which we would like to live under, but they are prepared to enter into patron-client relationships with the West of a kind which has proven productive in the past. And I would very much advocate, and on this I'll close, I would very much advocate the building of a similar type of relationship with Sisi in Egypt, especially because there appear to be other potential patrons offering themselves, and it would be a bad thing indeed if those suitors, so to speak, were to end up winning the hand of the new power in Egypt. And I'll stop there.